Hey, my name is Andrew Hayes. I'm a junior in electrical engineering. We're going to be talking about light and what kind of role it plays in modern electronics, specifically CCDs and the more broader realm of photonics. Now, the charge coupled device, or CCD, is a very useful device for imaging. You can find these in SLR cameras and especially in astronomy. They're used when really high precision images are needed. They've been around since the 70s and started getting more popular in the 80s. They started off in Bell Labs, originally designed as a memory device. But then they just basically figured out that, well, you could just use it as an imaging device if you're basically exposing it. They're very much in competition with lower power devices such as CMOS or complementary metal oxide semiconductor. Basically, they're what's going to be in your smaller devices such as cell phones, etc. These were both taken by a CCD. As you can tell, they can very easily detect small amounts of light. With all these little tiny stars are just pixels on a CCD. Great for high precision. This bucket analogy is a great way to describe how CCD works. This one came from a book from the 1970s, and the same analogy is used in the book I have from 2008 about CCDs. It's basically, if you look up CCDs, you'll see this analogy somewhere. Basically, what happens is you expose these buckets to rainwater, you stop the rain, and then one by one you move the rows over into these, move them down, and find out how much you've got. Basically, how this relates to an actual CCD is you expose the system to light through like your shutter, per se, and then photons go on little bits of silicon, and then one by one you move the tiny voltages over and then amplify them at the end. This was sort of a proof of concept in that same old textbook. You can't really find anything that, as basic. But basically what's happening is they're pulsing over and over, moving the charge. This is basically to show that you could, in fact, move the charge across the silicon. And in an actual CCD, it's not just positive, positive, positive like they have. There's actually a positive and then a negative to repel the charge in a certain direction. And they just move that biasing along to make sure all the charges move along. This whole idea of light as information is basically what drives the realm of photonics. It's very broad, but in the end, what you're trying to do is try to get information from point A to point B using only light. And here's kind of a demo to show you the basic idea. This one here. One of the unique things about this. Okay. Anyway, that was supposed to help. One of the interesting things about this is you can actually cross laser beams with no interference whatsoever. You can still get all information across without any distortion. Additionally, if you have different wavelengths of light, say you've had a green laser, you can separate those without any disruption to that. And for those of you who speak double E, this is kind of an idea of what's going on. It's actually a lot more simple than it looks up here. But basically what you have is you have your incoming signal, and this modulates a laser diode. Then over here, you basically have a transistor with its base region just open to light. And then after that, there's what's called a Darlington pair to up the gain, and then the output of it just goes to a speaker. you know, think about what this means for the future, you know, from, you know, the very immediate future to the horizon. In modern day chips such as, you know, the Intel Core i7 and Core GPUs, what have you, the problem with chip design goes from how fast can you push a processor to how many cores you can cram onto a single processor. You know, Core 2 Duo has 2, Quad Core 4, etc. And this little image over here is taken from Intel, kind of describing how all the little interconnect layers you need on top for when you process it. Core i7 chip can have as many as 20 layers building up, and if you've ever taken a solid state class, all that takes a lot of time to try and build these layers up and interconnect them, make sure they all work. But this way, using photonics, you can actually have a very fast method of having these cores communicate with each other. Since you can have beams cross without any interference, you really don't need all these layers. You can cut down manufacturing time and ultimately price. Kind of the holy grail of photonics is to have, instead of having electricity over here, just simply have light controlled by a transistor-like source, which is basically what these students in Zurich, I believe, are trying to do. These objects are basically focused on a single dye molecule, and they're trying to control the flow of light on the molecule size. Ultimately, this will lead to quantum computing. But even if they can regulate the flow of photons, the problem still remains to cram these photons into a single space so they can be used as a bit. Basically, what makes this all possible is the band gaps in silicon. A photon can excite an electron into the conduction band and make it conduct. So basically what happens when you expose the base of this transistor to light, it's allowing electricity to flow through here. Without any light, no electricity flows, and vice versa. The same thing with the CCD. By exposing those little bits of silicon to light, you get a charge, and then by moving that charge, you can see how much light was actually there. And I'll open up any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Andrew. Okay. Lots of time for questions. You're fine. It takes longer. Well, you might not know the answer. I don't know. What are the gains that you have to have? What is the incoming? How weak or strong is that laser signal?
The problem here, I quickly figured out, is not fully saturating the transistor. So if you get a strong enough amplitude of light, basically all of your electrons are in the conduction band. So this basically offers no resistance in the transistor. So, I mean, it varies with different phototransistors. There's different specs for each. But these have...
I think small, you made it angry.
Yeah. But these have small lenses to focus light on the transistor inside. It varies based on the chip.
So, basically, the iPod varies the output of the... Is it the intensity of the laser light?
Right.
And then that intensity change is picked up as a change in current through the amplifier.
Right.
Okay.
So the modulation in the laser room here means you get more or less current flowing through here.
And that's a change in voltage.
Right.
Okay.
The change in current means you get a change in voltage process.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then this little amplifier picks up that change in voltage and amplifies it to a sound.
More questions?
So, the more powerful the laser, the better the transmission, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it depends a lot on how the laser is designed. One problem with lasers is that even though it's a pretty coherent beam, it still fans out just a little bit, which is why for optical communications you need the plastic lines.
Mm-hmm. Could you actually explain what we're seeing here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't anticipate the question.
Okay.
So these are basically photonic crystal cross sections. These are on the scale of micrometers, but these can easily channel photons, like through a circuit chip, or a circuit, or what have you. But this kind of gets rid of that fanning out of the beam. Because like every laser, no matter what's going to have a certain end distance. So like, it may start off as minuscule there, but by the time it gets, say, a few meters away, it'll be about a few centimeters tall.
So how small are these structures then? These are example photonic crystals. So
this is 10 micrometers, 5 micrometers, 10.
And these are designed to allow the transmission of light
from one place to another in a very small built-in dimension.
Does that use internal reflection? Is it kind of like a reflection to keep it?
Just keep the photon going through that channel.
So then, are those just fiber optic cables, or?
Pretty much, on a very minuscule scale.
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of range can you get before you have to re-amplify stuff? Like, on these, there has to be some sort of loss, obviously, as you're reflecting within.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure on that. It depends a lot on the amplitude of your laser and the reflectivity of this, like how many photons you lose in the process. But all those elements combined. I don't know the exact formulas you've used to find that.
And you demonstrated to us sending analog signals. So how do you format it so it's sending digital signals?
It's not sending a digital signal.
How can you do it?
Basically, instead of having an analog waveform, mm-hmm. which is basically what this is doing, just sending, what would normally be used to drive headphones to this laser. Instead, what you do is you just send like a square wave. Mm-hmm. So it would be either all the way on or all the way off.
Yeah.
You send that a certain frequency. And then over here on the receiving side, you need a microcontroller, something like that, to turn those into bits.
Yeah, okay.
Could you also use orientation of the light polarization to do something like that too? So you'd have some electronic components that are only sensitive to longitudinally polarized or transverse polarized lights?
You need a filter on these.
Yeah. You know, you might as well get more bang for your buck, right?
Yeah.
There's so much you can do with light. Why waste it?
That's neat.
Okay, more questions.
I guess, quickly, did you know or read of any other applications for this aside from, like, computing or small networks?
Not really. Furthest extent so far is basically quantum computing.
Okay.
That's basically the holy grail of all this technology. That's what they're working for. The most immediate goal, like I said, is communication between different cores of processors and then moving up to having entire quantum computing.
Is this being used now?
It's being developed.
Okay,
there's no
commercial applications. Yeah. So it's being developed, but it hasn't actually been deployed in any existing commercially available chip technology.
Yeah.
More questions?
Yes.
Go for it.
I'm guessing it would be possible, of course, but what about using optics for not only transmitting data between cores, but transmitting data across the entire system, like from, say, over like a serial bus instead, because that would be also extremely fast and sort of remove the current gaps.
Mm-hmm. So basically using it as like a, basically an RS-232 or something like that.
Yeah.
A replacement for that.
Yeah.
You could, but at that point, you're communicating so fast with the laser that you're limited by what's on the other end of your. Because then your processors can't keep up with your data speed.
So your motherboard will be one giant chunk of optical material at some point. I can live with that. That would be awesome. Yeah.
I mean,
I wouldn't be able to monkey with it anymore.
Exactly.
To the hammer, I guess.
You can develop these lasers on a very small scale, though, like on a micrometer scale. You don't have to have like optics inside of your computer
right.
to make it work. Even here at SMU,
you work with Evans?
Huh?
You work with Evans, Gary?
No, but Nick Brown showed me a few of the lasers he built. They're extremely small. Like, they're on like a little tiny foam pad.
Question asked, I remember I heard a while back that they're trying to develop, I guess, computer that was basically just a giant glass block. Is this, have you heard of anything like that? Or maybe, because it seems, I would assume they're dealing with light, if they're going to be using some type of crystal structure. But never mind, I guess.
I think I might actually know what you're talking about, but if you know the answer.
I mean, I can, guesstimate as to what's going on, but I haven't heard of the actual device. Good question.
Yeah, the thing I remember was holographic storage. So rather than storing information in one dimension on a platter in a drive, you would have an optical cube, and you would use lasers in three directions to read the cube out by storing polarization information in the material.
But now, I also...
But I don't know if it's ever been made by...
Sounds really
good. They were talking about when I was in college. So, decade ago?
Well, because I heard about holographics, and I honestly don't know anything electrical engineering aside from that, but all I heard was once that if you have, let's say, a holographic image, from one holographic image, theoretically you should be able to reconstruct the whole, from the fragment.
That's true,
So would that be important?
Yeah, one image contains information about many phases of light. Has anyone here done holography before? If you ever get a chance to do it, it's a lot of fun. I recommend it. I don't know if there are any labs at SMU to do that. It's hard to do it by hand, but it's rewarding.
Okay.
Okay, any more questions? All right.